The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
U.S. government borrowing costs at auction have climbed to their highest level since the global financial crisis as investors demand better returns for buying its debt. Sale of benchmark 10-year treasuries yesterday produced the highest yield since 2007, though demand held up reasonably well. Attention now turns to today's 30-year treasury auction, which is expected to carry the highest financing rate in 25 years. Persistent inflation and swelling budget deficits are adding to the pressure, alongside rising oil prices and competition from corporate debt sales.
It's a weird time. I mean, I don't mean to use technical economic jargon with you, but it's a weird time.
No, same.
I think we're seeing a jobs market, you know, for if you just look at the numbers, right, we're growing at 2%. We've got 3% inflation. We've got 4% unemployment. We should all go home and feel good about the world. But I think we're all looking through these numbers to seeing maybe some weakness on the growth side, some very unevenness in the sources of growth, a lot of it going into AI and corporate spending. Weakening job market, weakening consumer spending. And then on top of it all is the geopolitics and some sense that I think, you know, that we all have when you talk about being exhausted by it all is this conflict in the Gulf that continues on and on and on. And frankly, even if there is a deal that is struck, it's not going away. The uncertainty is not going to go away. And I think increasingly, markets are starting to look through, you know, we're going to be living with this uncertain supply of oil, gas, aluminum, other key commodities for a long time.
And who has the worst debt of all in the world? Why, the United States, by far. It's a catastrophe. And nobody's, the people of the U.S. don't seem to really understand that much about it. But let me tell you, this is no small problem. We're getting this debt is growing so fast that we're getting weaker by the seconds. And I mean, that's something we ought to be concerned about.
And in the days of these kings, those toes which represent a nation to be formed, as I told you, in Europe when they go together. Now, they're trying to form that now, and this economic crisis may be the thing that'll plunge them into it. And in the days of these kings, that's the ones that maybe will rise up in the next year or two or three, or whatever, shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. In their days, God will set up a kingdom, which will be, of course, the kingdom of God, which shall never be destroyed.
We haven't talked enough about the curse of national debt, individual debt. That's the way the Bible describes it. It's really a national security problem. And yet people don't see it as such. We carry on. People talk about the economy. They're like, the economy is like a whited sepulcher, like Jesus said to those Pharisees in Matthew 23. It looks great on the outside. So much prosperity, so much abundance. We'll look at individual debt figures here in a second. Just in the last 5 years, how much credit card debt has skyrocketed. Put it on the card. Charge it to the future. Charge it to future generations. In the case of the swamp, $40 trillion. And to finance this deficit spending, now we've got to put treasuries out there that give quite a lot of interest back just to get people to buy U.S. debt. It's unbelievable what's happening. Die by suicide, as Lincoln said. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video of this program at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel, the YouTube channel. You can also watch it on demand on your favorite platform or device at your choosing. But thank you for joining us on the last show of the week. Hard to believe it's Friday. It's been a fast-moving week. We've got World Watch lined up for the end of the program and quite a bit of other material as well, including the curse of deficit spending. The Telegraph says the U.S. has paid the highest interest rate on newly issued bonds in a quarter of a century as the American national debt soars. You see language like this all the time. This is, of course, from the UK, the Telegraph. A soaring debt. Worse than 25 years. The Treasury sold 30-year U.S. government bonds at an interest rate of 5.2% on Thursday, the highest borrowing cost seen in debt auction or a debt auction since 2001, and they're going way up for the 10-year U.S. bonds as well. So investors from all over the world, American competitors in many cases, they're gobbling up U.S. treasuries, knowing that Uncle Sam's going to pay back a nice return, pay back the principal with interest. And so we pay this interest yearly. And meanwhile, the federal debt is approaching $40 trillion. Washington is being forced to offer higher returns to investors as the U.S. national debt pile nears $40 trillion. Notice, Washington is forced. More and more you're seeing that because as the Bible says, the servant is a slave to the one that's, you know, giving the money out or giving you the loan. It enslaves you. It puts you in captivity. The borrower is servant to the lender. I butchered that a little bit, but that's what the proverb says. Look at these numbers, and they just keep going up. There we are at $39.9 trillion, the U.S. national debt. And a big cause, it says here, tech giants such as Google, Alphabet, Microsoft, Amazon, Oracle, Meta have turned to the corporate bond market to raise money to finance their AI ambitions. This is not just a problem for the federal government. It's right across the board. It's with big companies, big tech, spending billions, trillions even, toward all these new technologies. And of course, with respect to AI, as we said earlier this week, we haven't even confronted or addressed all the ills and sicknesses that come from social media and from screen time and gadgets, their overuse. Now we just move headlong into AI and we put tens of billions of dollars into it. And we don't even think about what might could happen from this. We just keep going forward. Technology, it's a religion. It's a faith. People worship it. Goldman Sachs expects bond issuance by the five companies, those big tech companies, to reach roughly $250 billion this year and $400 billion in 2027. So $250 billion this year and then $400 billion next year and on it goes. There's no stopping it. There's no slowing it down. The flood of debt into the market means it's a buyer's market. Bond investors can demand higher yields, pushing up borrowing costs further. And so the interest that we pay on the debt, it goes up every year. We're already paying more on our interest payments, the U.S., I mean, than we are on national defense. And as I say, it's a national security issue, if ever there was one. As this article brings out, it's happening at a time of relative peace. I mean, there is the U.S.-Iran thing that's been relaxed. But that said, we're not in the midst of world war. We're not in the midst of an economic crisis that overwhelms the world. But that's coming, as Herbert Armstrong said there in that cold open. That's going to trigger the formation of the Holy Roman Empire, the seventh and final resurrection. That was Mr. Armstrong from back in the 1980s. How many people are just absolutely swimming in debt? with no way out. That's the United States of America. What did President Trump say? I think it was during his first term. He's the king of debt. He bragged about debt. He loves debt. The Telegraph says here, James Athey, a fund manager at Marlboro, said, the U.S. is running a record peacetime deficit while unemployment is low and the economy is still growing at around trend. This is an incredibly worrying situation for a major economy to be in, and strongly suggests that the economy isn't as robust as many are making out. It also means that should a recession occur, the deficit would blow out significantly. What happens when we hit a recession? What happens when we come upon trying times? What happens when other curses set in? And no one seems to be asking these questions. Even the talking heads, when they report on it, it's just so dry and straightforward. Here's what it is, and this is how consumer debt's going up, and this is credit card debt here, and student loan debt, that's going up way higher as well. $2 trillion now. Where does this end? No one goes there, do they? They don't, because they don't think it'll end. Once you're at $2 trillion in student loan debt, what does it mean? What does $4 trillion mean? What does $10 trillion mean? Listen to my father. This is from a program back in 2008 on the collapsing dollar, clip 5.
But is America being blessed today like we would all prefer? Or is there a problem in America? We have a deficit of close to $10 trillion. And this fiscal year, we have a deficit of over $400 billion. Next year is forecast to be even greater. And the dollar has lost something like 30 to 40% of its value since 2002. Why is that? Would you say we're being blessed, or is there something wrong with what's happening in the U.S.? God says in 1 John 3 and verse 2 that I wish above all things that you prosper and be in health, even as your spiritual life prospers. I think that could be a key to the problems we're having. That is, after all, New Testament, and that is what God says. And I think just about everybody that is a Christian believes in the New Testament, or they profess to believe in it. So why are we not prospering? Jesus Christ also said in Matthew 6 and verse 33 that you, if you seek first the kingdom, all these things, these material things around, will be given to you. How many people really do believe that? I mean, we're entering into some very troubling times. And if you've read any good book on the size of our deficit, it will, I'm sure, scare you if you truly understand what they're talking about.
Isn't it amazing when you look back at some of these clips? I made this point a couple weeks ago. That's 2008. He's sounding the alarm about $10 trillion. The federal debt was at $10 trillion, and deficit spending for that year was $400 billion. And he says, you know what? It's only going to go up. Here we are. Here we are 18 years later, and now it's $40 trillion. And now deficit spending, it's into the trillions. It's over a trillion. I forget the last count that I saw recently. It's a trillion to 1.5 trillion. Depending upon, you know, some of the difficult circumstances that we roll through. But like the Telegraph brings out, we're at a time, it's peacetime living for the most part. $40 trillion, as I say, once you get to those levels, well, what's $80 trillion? What would it be 18 years from now? If we played a clip from this program I'm giving to you right now, today, if time were to go on long enough, what would the federal debt be 18 years from now? 2044, where would we be? Would we double it? $40 trillion to $80 trillion? Would it be high? In just 18 years, we've gone from 10 to 40. That's four times what it was just 18 years ago. It's unsustainable. And scoff if you will. If you want to scoff and say, yeah, but 18 years, look at that time. Almost an entire generation has gone by and nothing's happened. Now we're being forced to raise interest rates that we have to pay. Because, well, we've got to finance our debt. We've got to be able to spend. Are we prospering? Is it prosperity? You drive through, there's some very big homes in North Edmond. Is it prosperity as you drive through these neighborhoods where there's a huge home and maybe three or four cars, a fair bit of property, when there's credit card debt at an astronomical figure and at interest rates, by the way, that just absolutely bury you financially? Is it prosperity to hold on to all of these debt, to pay for everything? To pay for everything and in the years ahead, over the next many years, to carry that debt with you well into your years of raising children, maybe even into your grandparent years. America certainly is a lot different today than it was 70, 80, 90 years ago. It's a shame, really it is a shame, that there aren't more voices out there saying, this is not going to end well. It's not. It just isn't. Here's another one from 2008, clip six.
Well, I think you can see we're talking about a problem that is not a small problem. This is something where, frankly, we need God's help because man can't solve these mountain-sized problems. He simply cannot do it. One paper called it a financial Armageddon. So, where is all this leading? Where is all of it leading? America is giving foreigners control over our economy. And you've heard the old adage, he who has the gold rules. Now, you might rather listen to an almighty God, the master economist, who says the borrower is the servant of the lender. He's a servant. So we're becoming servants of China and Japan and all these other foreign countries that are giving us this money. Would you say America is being blessed, even though we've been the most blessed nation on this earth? Are we being blessed now, or is something else happening here? Well, you need to understand what is happening. How could the world's only superpower allow something like that to happen? And isn't it time we sounded the alarm?
Indeed it is. How could America allow this to happen? We have ourselves to blame only. God, like Mr. Armstrong said in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, God gifted us with all of the prosperity, the greatest in the history of this world. And then once he fulfilled his promises to Abraham, then he said, all right, it's on you to not squander those blessings, that prosperity away. And that's what we've done. We've squandered it. We've got a massive credit card, the U.S. government. They love spending other people's money. Now, the Bible has laws of finance. And as my father said in that first clip, God wants us to prosper. Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. But you've got people like Nancy Pelosi will quote scriptures like that and say, yeah, we're just giving. We're giving away trillions. No, actually, you're stealing. You're taking from taxpayers and you're robbing future generations and you're throwing money to the wind. There's a story in the stack here about just all of a government website now that's tracing all of these wasteful products or projects, I should say. How long did Doge last? Just a few months? Everybody, they were rolling up their sleeves, good to go. They wanted to find out where all of this waste and inefficiency was, and they found a lot of it in just a matter of weeks. And then that collapses. that effort, that department, just like the U.S. economy is going to collapse. Because we're not addressing the problem. There's no, as I have said so often, there's no repentance. There's no willingness to change. When it comes to spending money, there's no willingness to do anything differently. There's no willingness to save. I mean, it would take some courage, some standalone courage, to dial it back. I think the last time that's happened, who was it, Coolidge? Over 100 years ago? That actually cut spending back? He went in the other direction? When has that happened? In our time, it hasn't happened. As soon as there's an election in 6 months, you got to start preparing for the next election. And when you start preparing for the next election, you better be willing to promise, you better be willing to promise the constituents some money, some goodies, some things. Because that's what we have an appetite for. You see how many consumers are swimming in debt. And it's no wonder the government's the same way. It's a sickness from top to bottom. Listen to this montage about consumer spending and credit card debt. This is clip 10.
Americans owe more than $1 trillion in credit card debt, up 60% from just 5 years ago. Meantime, higher interest rates make debt even more difficult to pay off. It's a downward spiral, causing credit card delinquencies to surge.
Bankruptcies up 12% in the last year alone. And it's not just millennials and older generation members like Emanalo now caught up in the debt interest whirlpool.
It's a huge problem, and it's a specifically huge problem for young people. We've seen the rate of credit card debt for young people go up about 190% since 2020.
And student debt now near $2 trillion.
Gen Z has more debt than any other generation in history before it.
Let's talk about how much credit card debt I have, and spoiler alert, it is a lot.
Hey, is there any other 18-year-olds with like $6,000 in credit card debt?
And there's a new debt trap for the young, says Kobliner.
Buy now, pay later is one more example of what we're calling frictionless finance, which might sound great, but it's actually quite pernicious. In general, getting further and further away from knowing how much we're spending. And sometimes we don't even realize when we're spending. In the last decade, we literally have changed the way we've made purchases. We no longer take out our wallet, use cash, and count out the dollar bills. Nobody does that anymore.
With my student debt, my husband's student debt, our car loans, credit cards, it's probably like the amount of a mortgage, like an amount of a current mortgage, like $125,000, $150,000.
If you look at real disposable income, that's after inflation, after taxes, it's lower today than it was a year ago. And that's for the, that's economy wide, right? So that means that, you know, stands to reason about half the population is experiencing outright decline.
You may find yourself, like so many of our fellow Americans, sucked under.
I like how the one lady said, buy now, pay later. It's frictionless finance. She wasn't praising that sentiment. She was just noting that a lot of people think that way. Put it on the card. There's no friction. No problem. And so people do. And credit card debt skyrockets. Student loan debt skyrocketing. Federal debt, you see it right across the board, as I say. And where are the people in government? It's easy to focus in on Isaiah 1 and the sickness, but you've got to add in Isaiah 3. Where are the leaders? The economists? The parents? Teaching their children. No, don't do that. Or if you get a credit card to build some credit, okay. How? But here's how you use it. Deficit spending is not good. Did you know in the world tomorrow that nations aren't going to spend on debt? They're not going to be able to put it on the credit card. And individuals won't either. What a different society that is. It's God's society. God has all these verses. It's more blessed to give than to receive. I wish above all things that you prosper and be in good health. Freely have you've received, freely give. Just give. The spirit of give, the spirit of sacrifice, the spirit of helping and serving and sharing. It's going to spread over all the earth. And no debt, no punishing debt, no debt that you can't recover from. I mentioned in a lecture a couple years ago, this was back when the correspondence course was just going on, and I was going to continue going and not stop. It was up to the lesson 57 or 58 or 59, and several of those lessons in the fifth. I studied this when I was a young man, before I even got married. I'll give you some of the titles. Why Millions Are in Debt. This was back in the 1960s. Why Millions Are in Debt. The Key to Financial Success. What's the key? Well, focus on giving to God. Focus on the spirit of service and giving. And then God will bless you. Don't steal and just throw money to the wind because you have no self-control. The great key to peace and prosperity. And then it had a couple on success, the vital key to success in life. And then those lessons, four or five of them, revolved around personal and family finance. It changed my life. I was in my 20s and I thought, okay, I don't have a lot of education, but this makes sense to me. Don't accumulate debt. Fundamentally, so much of the deficit spending is not to give, it's to satisfy lusts of the flesh. That's a problem. This is from the booklet, Solve Your Money Troubles. The basic cause for money problems is what some financial advisors call the Joneses syndrome. That is the keeping up with the Joneses. Overextending a normally adequate income for luxuries and personal indulgence is a leading cause of money problems. It says God wants you to prosper. He wants you to be able to live the debt-free way of life and experience the blessings that come as a result of obeying His financial laws. He wants us to build character. He wants us to develop patience. He wants us to look to Him for blessings and prosperity. That's not a message you hear much of today, as every man goes about doing what seems right in his own eyes. That 18-year-old there in the montage, $6,000 in credit card debt. I feel sorry for that young man. He's digging himself a hole that he's not going to be able to get out of. He's going to be paying rent. He's going to have car payments. He's going to be accumulating debt. He's going to get more credit cards. That's going to be his lifestyle. The fact of the matter is you must learn to get along without credit cards, the old correspondence course said. Now, today you have to have some credit just to be able to buy a house. So if you get a credit card or two, is there anyone there to teach how you would use it? It is a powerful tool. And so much of everything today is automated. In some cases, you can't even go out for an evening and use cash. Everything's just becoming electronic. So, okay, you get a credit card, but consider the devil's attack while you're doing it. Don't just cave in. It's kind of like what we say with social media and screen time. Just because everybody's doing it. You've got to be able to stand up for God's way of life, His way of living. There's going to be technology in the world tomorrow. We're going to use technology, but God's going to teach us how to use it the right way. What a chaotic, complex, confusing world this is. So, and that's what happens. The moment you invite sin in and tolerate sinful behavior. Bibi, there's a story about Bibi, and he's out there actively seeking President Trump's endorsement. The Israeli elections are on October 27th. And you know what we've said before about Bibi and the rising lion courage that he's shown in recent years? the only Churchillian type figure really that there is in the world today. And when you talk about the dearth of leadership, Isaiah 3, what a huge mistake it would be for the Trump administration to just throw him under the bus. Reporters have asked President Trump multiple times, do you give your endorsement? And, you know, as Trump is becoming better and better at, he kind of dances around the question. He avoids the question. When Bibi Netanyahu and Donald Trump met in the Oval 2 weeks ago, the president asked the Israeli prime minister how he was doing in the polls. And one of the aides said, oh, he's doing great. He's going to win. Axios would love to see Bibi lose, of course. It says Bibi or Netanyahu is not winning. And so far, Trump hasn't given him the endorsement he hopes for, despite being asked about it repeatedly by reporters. And then later, time is running short for Netanyahu. Listen to this from Donald Trump, President Trump, with Hugh Hewitt, clip 3.
Is there anyone in Israel better than him to do the job? Is there anyone better than Bibi?
Well, I don't know most of them. I know some of them, obviously, but I don't know most of them. But I think that Bibi and I have had a very good. If we weren't working together, if Bibi wasn't, if I had a weak person, a president or prime minister over in Israel, you know, you have a president there too.
Right.
If we had somebody weak over there, Israel would not exist today.
So it's complimentary, but it's also a bit of a dodge, isn't it? Is there anybody better? Are you going to endorse Bibi? Evidently not yet, if he is. Trump was asked by reporters 4 times in recent weeks whether he endorses Netanyahu. Each time he stopped short of doing so. In several interviews, Trump praised Netanyahu for being a great wartime president or prime minister, but each time referred to him in the past tense. Yeah, he was a good wartime president or prime minister. We have worked well together in the past. If you're paying attention, you can see the trend line. You see where this is headed. Just listen to some of the close advisors to President Trump. It's very disturbing. What happens when you run off a Churchill-type leader in a world that is desperate, doesn't know it, but a world that's desperate for leadership? For any semblance of righteous leadership, courageous, bold leadership. Leaders that will tell you the truth, even if it's uncomfortable. It says here, a senior U.S. official said the White House will not repeat past mistakes and allow Israeli domestic politics to hold up its regional agenda. All these anonymous sources. Again, Axios, it's got an axe to grind for sure. But we'll see. October 27, it's coming upon us pretty quick. And according to the polls, and again, they have an agenda too, just like here in the States, Netanyahu's not doing so well. It says if he manages to do that and neither side is able to form a government, Netanyahu will remain as a caretaker prime minister for several more months until another election is held. We, as I told the students on Monday, there's an opportunity that, or there may be an opportunity for our Celtic Throne crew to head over to Israel this November. And of course, the last one got cut short because of war, so we're fervently praying for God to just calm the region down, at least for 2-3 weeks, so that we can get in there and perform in the cities of Judah. But we're going to be going in, if it works out, just days after the Israeli election. And who knows what the political landscape might be like at that time. We'll see. It's something to pray about, because we'd love to get the program over there to bring an Isaiah 40 and verse 9 message to little Israel, to biblical Judah. The people need it. They need it. I had the guys put together just a snapshot, just to work our way back around to that economic curse that we're putting upon ourselves. Just a snapshot of the sickness, the disease that we see spreading. President Trump, even though God said he would come back, it's obviously not addressing so many of our ills, our sicknesses, our diseases, our cancers. The Dallas airport, they've added Islamic foot washing stations to restrooms. Notice the reasoning here. DFW plans to install Islamic foot washing stations at airport bathrooms. It's going to cost about $300,000. The airport will add wudu or ablution stations to existing men's and women's restrooms in Terminal D. Wudu is the Islamic ritual of washing parts of the body, including the feet, before prayer. Construction is expected to be completed by the end of the year. Airport officials say designated washing stations can help prevent travelers from washing their feet in conventional restroom sinks. So the Muslims are washing their feet in the sinks. And we don't want to be Islamophobic. No, so we've got money to burn. Did you hear me? We've got money to burn. So the foot washing station, imagine if they said, you know what? Jesus taught a little bit about foot washing, and we want to do everything that we can to comply with that. To make sure, again, it's a little bit of a different comparison here, but you get what I mean. The way that we cater to these foreign religions, these other cultures, we invite them in. It's huge, this problem for America and for Britain in particular. No other nation does this. How many Muslim nations do you think would say, you know what, we do have a growing Christian population, so we want to do this, 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 and this for that group? It's only in Israel. There you go. They've got to wash their feet, and right now they're doing it in our sinks. So it makes sense, right? We have to do this. We have to do this. Just like the U.S. has to print more treasury bills and offer higher interest. We've got to keep spending. Of course we've got to spend. Isaiah 1 and verse 7. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence, and it's desolate, as overthrown by strangers. That's what's happening. I know it's not politically correct to say that, but it's biblically correct. Another one, taxpayer-funded school to hide grades in the name of mental health. We've got so many sick young people who, by the way, are burying themselves in credit card debt, but they're so mentally disturbed, some of them. We're just going to do away with grades at Michigan University. Michigan University! It's one of the biggest universities in the country. And we're getting rid of the grading system? Yeah, it's pass or fail. If you barely stagger across the finish line, we'll give you the pass. Everything's good. I mean, you're paying your tuition. That's all that we need, really. We're not looking to make a relationship between professors and students. We're not looking to give someone guidance morally, certainly not. Just give them a pass. Give them a pass. And charge them astronomical fees that puts them into $2 trillion of debt. That's the student loan debt in the United States of America, $2 trillion. That 18-year-old, if he goes off to college, he's got $6,000 in credit card debt right now. If he goes off to college for 4 years, think about the debt he's going to be, think about the debt he'll be carrying when he's 22. Listen to this montage about that new policy at the University of Michigan. Clip 13.
About this, getting a lot of attention, this decision.
It really is. Good morning. Good morning to all of you. So the University of Michigan is getting rid of some final grades for the sake of students' mental health. The university announcing it's dropping first semester grades in an effort to, quote, curb the mental health crisis faced by many young college students. This is a pilot program. It's set to roll out in fall 2027. It applies to students enrolled in the College of Literature, Science, and the Arts. So that's about half of Michigan's roughly 8,000 first-year students. Now, class results will be displayed as either pass or no credit on transcripts, and students will still receive grades in the class as the semester unfolds, but final grades will not be recorded. And Michigan is one of the largest universities in the United States. It has over 35,000 undergraduates, and the school says the program will allow a smooth on-ramp as freshmen accelerate from high school into a more rigorous college curriculum, and it'll give students a chance to refine their academic skills and build early momentum. Now, Michigan declined further comment, but did tell ABC News that they will, quote, have more details to share this fall as faculty, staff, and students in the College of Literature, Science, and the Arts continue to inform the design, development, and implementation of a pilot program. Hmm.
Just a few years too late for me.
Exactly. We all would have been
great. Yeah. This is a few years too late. I wish I could have gone to college and not had grades. It's just a joke. It's just good fun. It's a trial program. We'll see how it works. We're doing it for the sake of mental health. If they come in and they don't get grades, maybe that will help them mentally to feel better about themselves. Maybe we can give them an award or a ribbon as well. You passed. Here again, Mr. Armstrong. Way ahead of his time when he talked about the problem with modern education. This is from the Free Press. The night before JP Morgan software developer was due back at the office, he lay in bed, unable to sleep. The best way I can describe it, the 30-year-old said, is I got time away from a toxic family member. When you have separation, it's easy to forget how much you hate at work. He'd spent 6 months using the Family and Medical Leave Act, brought to you by Congress. The FMLA, the Family and Medical Leave Act, 30 years old. He's a youth, basically. Which guarantees eligible employees up to 12 weeks a year of job-protected leave for their own serious health condition or to care for a spouse, child, or parent. Here comes Uncle Sam. Listen. We've got trillions to spend, and we'll spend it on FMLA. And you can take a leave for 3 months if you're struggling with some mental issues. And the government will be there to pay the tab. It says the software engineer wasn't dealing with a life-threatening illness or caring for a family member with one. He was feeling stuck. He was feeling stuck at work, so he needed some time off. Paid leave. And he got it. This article basically is about young people using any excuse possible, including government funding, government social programs, to not work. Anything but working. Is this the sign of a healthy society? Is this a sign of individual health? This same guy's probably got $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 in credit card debt. And who knows how much student loan debt? The software engineer got his therapist and his primary care doctor to sign off that he qualified, and he spent the next half a year walking his dog, hanging out with his wife, taking weekend trips to upstate New York and Philadelphia, watching Hunger Games, coding for fun, and yes, seeing his therapist. It was so nice. I get giddy when I talk about how much I enjoyed those 6 months. I get pretty excited when I think about how much I didn't do anything. How much I stopped working, how much I stopped serving the community or society or myself with character development and growth. One of the most obvious evidences of a true Christian is that he's a hard worker. And what do we see in our society? So much weakness and laziness, so much complacency, so much lukewarmness. It's a sign of the times. You pull all of these stories together, what a snapshot it is. Whether it's consumer debt, federal debt, laziness, complacency, satisfying the Muslim religion, no problem. New social programs for them, no problem. The Federalist. Massachusetts won't let you sell puppies under 8 weeks but it lets you abort babies until birth. Those puppies, you've got to take care of them. You can't offload them to a new owner when they're just 3-4 weeks old. They're too vulnerable. So we're really concerned about that puppy's life. Unborn babies, not so much. Carry it all the way to the pregnancy, and you still can put it to death. What kind of derangement and delusion and wickedness and lawlessness could this be? It's prophesied. Without, like Paul said in 2 Timothy 3, without even natural affection. What should be natural, right? What should be normal, right? No, we're so far gone, so far removed from God. And God says, the soul, from the sole of the foot, even to the head, there's no soundness. There's just wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. There's no soundness in our thinking. Otherwise, you'd see it. You'd see soundness. You'd see more common sense when it comes to deficit spending, let's say, or hard work, or caring for children, loving children. Puppies are nice too, but a baby? At 9 months when it's fully formed and about to be born? That's a sign of sickness. Conservative Daily News, this story from Mamdani, remember New York? The social programs there, and the only way to really make sure that it's not abused by people coming from out of state or whatever is to make them show proof of ID. Now, here's a case where the radical left, they love identification. It's very important because with one of their cherished social programs, I mean, we don't want people taking advantage of that. We might go broke as a city. New York's already broke, but we'll leave that aside. Democratic New York Mayor Zohran Mamdani announced in a recent press conference that he intends to spend over $70 million in taxpayer dollars to launch 5 government-run grocery stores across New York, promising a 30% discount on all groceries. How much? $70 million. You get groceries a third off. This is great. If you're a New Yorker, it's also probably pretty good if you're from Connecticut or New Jersey. I'd go into the city and shop as well. But see, Mamdani, it's a brilliant way to keep illegals out. And by illegals, I mean those that are out of state. Make them show identification. Make them prove that they're from New York City. Well, you know the point that the article makes. Don't do that, though, when people are voting in the most secure elections in the world. If they come in and they can't even speak English, let them vote. They are not to be questioned. Do not ask them for ID. These are signs. Yet again, these are signs of sickness. These are signs of disease. This is one from the USA Today on Carolyn Leavitt's. She's stepping down as the White House press secretary. The truth is, since returning to the White House after the birth of my daughter, I have felt in my heart that I cannot be the best mom my 2 young children deserve. And so she's going to step down. I don't know if there's more to it. Maybe there is. But what she's saying is that she's doing it for her family. USA Today says, after Leavitt announced she was leaving her job, an author at the New Republic wrote, so Leavitt's photograph isn't a lie. But you know what is? Everything else she said during her time as fascism's mouthpiece. Adam Schiff, a Democrat, sneered that Leavitt was leaving to spend a little more time with the truth. So here it exposes the Democrats' double standard. They're supposed to be pro-women, always, always pro-women. Not conservative women, certainly not. This is the New York Post on the subject of women. Why can't the WNBA just say what a woman is? Here it's a league for women. You know, and one of them, I forget which one, she comes out and says, men shouldn't play in our league. Again, common sense. Common sense, sound thinking. If I was a woman in that league, I wouldn't want men to take my job, to take my opportunity to play professional basketball. But we're so far gone. Everything is so gray. The absolute standards are completely gone. That even in the Women's National Basketball Association, the officials can't really define what a woman is. These are signs of sickness. And I could go on and on. Let me just finish with a clip from my father's program in 2004. This is more than 20 years ago, clip 7.
Let me read you another statement here. This one by George Washington, where he talks about decaying morals means a decaying nation. And here's what he wrote. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, this is our first president, and many people believe the greatest one. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Now again, I'm going to make a statement here. I hope it doesn't shock you. But I'm telling you that America and Britain lead the world in immorality. Now that is just simply a fact. And yet we have the worst morals in the world. I mean, I just have to say that because it's true. And you can look at even at Bible prophecy. And Ezekiel said in Bible prophecy that Israel, which is certainly includes America and Britain, but he said Israel was worse than the nations around them. Worse. And here's a people that have a history with God, and these other Gentiles do not, and yet they're worse in their morals. How do you figure that? What's happened to America and Britain? Where are we headed? Where is this leading us? You need to think about this, as do we all.
We certainly should. And yet again, just like with the deficit spending, the federal debt, you could look at that and say, well, but okay, what he says there, there's a lot of truth to that. But the fact is, we're 20 some years on from that. And the sky hasn't fallen. We haven't gone into captivity. We're not in the midst of world war. People can do what they want, and people seem happy. Are we happy? Look at all these stories I gave to you before we went into that clip. The handwriting is on the wall, and that message, as great as it was in 2004, it applies to today, all the more so. Same with the clips from 2008. On deficit spending, on the debt bomb that's about to go off. We were right. Tomorrow's news today, if you haven't subscribed to the Trumpet magazine, this is the latest issue right here, all in on the AI gamble. We are all in with this new technology. It doesn't matter if it costs trillions, or if it hurts people, or if it causes mental disease. We've just got to go all in. As I say, make sure that you subscribe to Tomorrow's News Today. There's no cost or obligation. I don't really have the time left for World Watch, but we're going to play it anyway. You get some bonus content on today's episode of the Trumpet Daily, but we won't charge you for any of those extra minutes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us today. We appreciate you joining us all week. And we'll see you next time.
Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey signed a mutual defense alliance on August 7th. Pakistan specified that the agreement means any armed attack against any one of the three states shall be regarded as an attack against them all. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said the alliance gives the countries a tool for combating terrorism. Saudi Arabia already has a mutual defense treaty with Pakistan, an agreement Pakistan reportedly almost invoked against Iran in March or April. Pakistan has also signed a similar but separate deal with Kuwait. Both Saudi Arabia and Kuwait have been attacked by Iran extensively since March for cooperating with the United States. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Turkey has joint control over American nuclear weapons on its soil. Saudi Arabia is pushing for its own nuclear capability. The Mecca agreement could result in a nuclear-armed alliance surrounding Iran. This is especially intriguing when analyzed alongside Bible prophecy. To learn more about what Bible prophecy indicates will happen in the Middle East very soon, read The King of the South. Germany's ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems delivered the INS Drakon, the largest submarine built in Germany since World War II, to Israel's Navy, according to Israeli media last week, highlighting Israel's increasing dependence on Germany for security. The roughly $635 million Drakon, Israel's most expensive such vessel, is the sixth submarine received from Germany. Three additional submarines of the more advanced Dakar class are expected to arrive beginning 2031 as part of a separate $3.4 billion deal signed in 2022. This naval reliance is a dangerous miscalculation on Israel's part. Both Bible prophecy and history reveal that Germany is not a true friend of Israel. Germany currently accounts for a third of Israeli weapons imports, making it the second largest supplier after America. These gestures lull Israel into trusting Germany as that nation builds the capabilities to betray it. To learn more, read Are Germany and Israel Truly Friends? A drone carrying an explosive device was discovered overnight between August 4th and 5th at the Leipzig-Halle airport, which serves as a hub for military logistics supporting Ukraine and NATO allies. Investigators believe the device targeted a Ukrainian Antonov cargo aircraft. A bomb disposal robot removed the detonator from the drone. Security authorities believe the detonator malfunctioned, preventing an explosion. German officials described the incident as a new and more dangerous category of security threat. Drones and robots enable foreign actors to strike far behind enemy lines without putting soldiers at risk. Multiple coordinated incidents guided by artificial intelligence could cripple airports, even if each attack caused only limited damage. The German government is currently equipping the nation's eight largest airports with sophisticated drone defense technology at the speed of light, according to a statement from the Federal Aviation Association. To learn more, read Germany is arming for World War III. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.